stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are reviewing the Seeker cards in Devil Reef, the second Mythos pack in the Innsmouth Conspiracy cycle. There are spoilers through, if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. A quick reminder of how we rate cards here on The Whisper in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst receive an auto fail, and the cards in between receive a plus one, zero, or Elder Thing, respectively. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these player card reviews. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. Without further ado, let's get started. The first Seeker card in Devil Reef is The Truth Beckons. It is a one-cost event that has an intellect and agility skill icon, and the insight trait, you play only if you are not engaged with an enemy. You move, choose an unrevealed location, move one location at a time along the shortest path toward that location until you enter that location. End this effect if you reveal a location, if an enemy engages you, or if your movement is blocked.
I'm kind of skeptical on this card. I think in solo, it's going to be pretty hard to find a circumstance where you're going to want this card over something like Shortcut. While this card can potentially allow you to move several locations in a single turn, the location that you have to move to has to be unrevealed, which kind of limits its usefulness. I think in multiplayer, though, this card can be a lot more useful, as you can kind of sit in one location and gather up clues for a turn or two while another investigator moves forward in the map. And then you can use this card to quickly catch up with the rest of your team and continue investigating. This card feels very scenario or campaign specific. Like, if you played this in the Forgotten Age, I think you would seldom find use for it. But in Innsmouth, we've already seen a few scenarios that have pretty large maps to them, and this can make backtracking a lot easier.
Yeah, I think, and this was one of the cards that FFG spoiled in the preview article, and I think at the time we hadn't seen the new list of taboos that added Pathfinder. And I mean, this has always been the problem with the Seeker card pool, is that they have Shortcut and Pathfinder available to them, and so any other movement events that have been created have generally not lived up to those standards, being so high, and simply haven't been able to gain much traction among the players. Now, this might gain some traction, but I think I would agree with you that at least in solo play, this is going to be very difficult to use effectively. Basically, you're probably going to end up moving one location under most circumstances, and you're taking an action to do that. So it's not exactly like you're getting a whole lot of...
And a card out of your hand.
Yeah, you're not generating a whole lot of value by playing this, unless you're able to move a significant distance. Now, that's much easier to do in multiplayer if you have somebody scouting ahead. And, when I think of big maps, I always return to the Midnight Masks and how everybody can sort of scatter in all directions. And then you could end up having, if you needed to make that move to the graveyard or downtown or somewhere like that, if you can get somebody, say, at East Town, then potentially you could be downtown in one action with this, which you're getting a lot of value out of it. But I'm not sold on this in solo. I think I would still stick with Shortcut over this most of the time, and then I think Pathfinder being as powerful as it is, that you'd be upgrading to that, and this will be back in the box.
Oh, I was just gonna say, it also doesn't have very good icons on it either, so you, like, in a pinch, you can't even really commit it to a skill test.
Yeah, and I mean, it does have the hunch, the insight trait, so it can go in Joe Diamond's hunch deck, and he can play it for free. But it's already sort of a very situational card, so it's going to be very difficult to play from the hunch deck because you're gonna need to move the turn you draw it, and that's not always going to be the case. So while this has the potential to move you great distances, I think in practice it's going to probably not be as powerful as you hoped. How would you rate this one?
I think I would give it a zero or an Elder thing. In solo, I think 9 times out of 10 you're better off just playing shortcut. And in multiplayer, I think it's really going to depend on the campaign or the scenario that you're playing on how much use you can get out of this card. Like you were saying, like in a scenario like Murder at the Excelsior Hotel, where one player can kind of move around the hotel and you can use this card to quickly catch up with them. I think that your use of this card is going to be very limited.
Yeah, that's a yeah, I was going to say zero simply because I think it will see some play in multiplayer, but in solo play I think it definitely drops down to an elder thing. It's not a card that I mean, if I have the option of shortcut, I'm going to be taking shortcut, and that's going to take up that movement spot, and this card will join several of the others that have attempted to provide some sort of extra movement that just haven't lived up to that standard. Being able to move as a fast action is incredibly powerful, and you can use it pretty much whenever you want, and it also has some very great benefits, like if you are engaged with a boss or something like that, and you happen to need to move away, or a massive enemy, you can move away and not trigger attacks of opportunity, which is huge, and that is definitely not the case with this one.
Yeah, and another thing against this card too, if you're playing it in a campaign, your use of this card is going to vary so wildly from scenario to scenario. And like we were saying earlier, there isn't really great skill icons on it either, so committing this card to a skill test is going to feel lackluster as well. So I guess what we're really getting to is that the biggest shortcoming of this card is its consistency over cards like Shortcut and Pathfinder. It's going to vary so wildly from game to game that it's going to feel I don't know, it's going to feel bad when you draw this at late in a scenario and all the locations are revealed and this card is essentially useless.
Yeah, it is so situational that I think I've talked myself down to an elder thing for this one. I just don't see myself playing this anytime soon. The second Seeker event is Gaze of Arash. It is a 2-cost event that costs 2 experience points. It has combat and agility skill icons, the spell and curse trait. You reveal 7 random chaos tokens from the chaos bag, deal a total of 1 damage plus 1 additional damage for each curse or auto fail token revealed, divided as you choose among enemies at your location. This action does not provoke attacks of opportunity. Now, this is here's a spell that synergizes with a ton of cards in the card pool, like Arcane Initiate, Diana Esperance, and Marie Lambeau. It synergizes with the Favor of the Moon, which was spoiled in the Lair of Dagon preview article that basically lets you auto draw at least one curse token if you need to. It's one of only a handful of cards that enables you to deal damage to multiple enemies at a location, and theoretically you could deal a total of 8 damage with this if you get the greatest pull in the game, but I think that's really this card's only downside if you're playing that curse deck, is that unlike Radiant Smite, the tokens here you're revealing are random and not sealed.
Yeah, but that being said, you don't have to make a skill chest, unlike Radiant Smite. So there is that. Yeah, like you were saying, this card is excellent in dealing, I think, even 3 to 4 damage. If you get that much out of it, this is going to feel pretty good most of the time. The fact that you can hit aloof enemies at your location is also really nice, especially if you're playing Path to Carcosa and you can deal with the man in the pallet mask in a single action. That's really nice. I mean, that being said, probably you could investigate as well, but I digress. Yeah, I get the really the only thing that kind of is a bit of a jet against this card is that you have to be building your deck around the Curse Bless mechanic. You can't just like include this card in any deck. But again, like this is really quite good and definitely worth building a curse deck around. And Seekers already have so many excellent ways of both adding curse tokens to the bag and getting some sort of benefit out of that this is just another great option in the huge pile of cards that they have access to.
Yeah, we're starting to see more of the value of why you would want to build your deck around the Bless or Curse mechanic. And initially, it was a lot of, well, these tokens are going to be in the bag, and you're going to be drawing them from skill tests. And now we're starting to see the cards that you're putting them in the bag, not necessarily with the intent of drawing them, but of leveraging them to power these other effects. And I think that both Radiant Smite and the Gaze here are very good reasons to be exploring that mechanic. And I think if you are, then you are going to be picking up this card at some point. And I mean, it only costs 2 experience points, so the rogues can also Trish Scarbrough can take this, of course, and then Mystics can use it. Yeah, it's open. I think for this one, I mean, we gave Radiant Smite a +1, and I think this is another +1 if you're playing the curse deck. If you're not, well, then this card isn't going to be useful to you.
Yeah, pretty much. There's I don't think there's really much else to say about this card. It's pretty genuinely good, so.
That's going to do it for our look at the Seeker cards in Devil Reef. We had the Truth Beckons and the Gaze of Arrakesh. Truth Beckons, again, it's another one of these movement events that suffers because there are simply better options in the card pool. And the Gaze is generally going to be very good for you if as long as you're able to keep enough curse tokens in the Chaos bag. And if you are playing a seeker, you do have those that ability. So another mixed bag here for the seeker investigators. But I mean, Shortcut and Pathfinder are just so hard to beat that Truth Beckons had a knock against it right from the start.
Yeah, it's very situational. What kind of seems to be a bit of a trend is that the Curse and Bless cards seem to be the obviously kind of the center point of all of these packs, and the other cards kind of seem to be more interesting, kind of niche corner case cards, or they're downgrades of other cards that we've seen already, so.
Yeah, I
I
think
don't,
that
yeah.
the card pool has gotten so large now that it is going to be difficult for them to find that design space, in a thing like an event that moves you, in order to create something new that is going to be strong enough to knock out Shortcut. And I mean, Shortcut's already so good that if they did create such a card, that it would probably end up on the list of taboos, shortly thereafter, simply because it would be considered to be too good. So, At least the curse and bless mechanic gives the designers a new area to explore, even though a lot of these cards are seem to be somewhat pushed in power.
Yeah, I mean, I think they kind of have to be, right? Because you kind of have to jump through this extra hoop just to get them to do work. So, you know, I think it's generally like a good design. In most cases, I think the only flubs were Faustian Barkman and Deep Knowledge, personally. But I think overall, the Curse and the Bless mechanic, we can kind of really start to see the fleshings of, wow. We can kind of see these two decks begin to really flesh out and the directions that they're going to take. And each class seems to have a different, very distinct way in how they interact with the tokens, which is really interesting.